The scripture today comes from the book of Ecclesiastes. It's a very familiar scripture to us. For everything, there is a season, a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up what has been planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek, a time to lose. A time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to tear, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, a time to speak up. A time to love, a time to hate. A time for war. And a time for peace. The Lord always blesses the reading of the Holy Scripture. We come today to Ecclesiastes as we're working our way through the books of the Bible. I was doing my laundry yesterday and I saw that a quarter had dropped on the floor from my pants pockets. And so I picked it up and I do what I always do when I pick up a quarter. I have a little ritual that I follow. I look at the quarter to see what state is on the back of it. And then I hold the quarter just long enough till I can have a memory of something that happened with me in that state. I've been to all 50 states, and so I always just hang on just long enough until I can remember something that I experienced there. Or if it's an older quarter and it's a year that's on it, then I always stop and think, I hold on to the quarter until I can think of something that happened in that year. And, you know, I'm so doggone old that I can remember all the years now on the quarters. So, and if it's a rare quarter from before I was born, I'm an American history buff, so I think of something else from history. Well, this quarter I picked up yesterday, the year was 1988. It was one of the old quarters. And so I got to thinking, what was going on with me in my life in 1988? And in 1988, the bishop decided to send me from the Granite City Church, where I'd been a pastor, to the Glen Carbon Church, where I began a 13-year ministry there. 1988 was also the year that Mindy turned 6 and Allison turned 4. And so just as I was thinking of that, I looked up on the wall, and I have a photo of them in my bedroom. And I looked at that photo and I thought, I bet you that photo was taken in 1988. Because Mindy looks about 6 and Allison looks about 4. And as I was looking at that photo, they looked really happy in that photo. And I thought to myself, you know, Mindy and Allison are a huge, huge part of my life right now. But the two little girls that are in that photo don't exist anymore. And the reason I thought that is because I've been reading Ecclesiastes. And the main theme of Ecclesiastes is this: here today, gone tomorrow. Here today, gone tomorrow. The book of Ecclesiastes uses the word, in many of our translations, it uses the word vanity. All is vanity. That's a real poor translation of the Hebrew word, because the Hebrew word is actually a word that means breath. And the way we should translate it is everything is fleeting. Everything is temporary. Everything is unpredictable. Everything is sort of like the breath or the wind. You don't know what's going to happen next. It's just there and then it's not. And that's the essence of the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, if you're a parent and you have a teenager in the room, then you might want to distract them for the rest of this sermon, because everything I have to say about Ecclesiastes is the opposite of what you're trying to teach your kids. So, you know, get them something to do or whatever. And Ella, oh my gosh, Ella, you've been a teenager longer than anybody in this room, so you're not even, yeah, so this applies to you too here, so. So here are some things that we find out in Ecclesiastes. When it comes to life, enjoy it while you can. Ecclesiastes. Another thing from Ecclesiastes, I'm going to get to the part in a little bit that, you know, the teenagers, your parents don't want you to hear, but I'll get to that in a little bit here. Another theme in Ecclesiastes is, you know, all the stuff that really matters to you right now, there will come a day when it, none of it will. So chill out. Another theme of Ecclesiastes is anything that's new that you think you just thought of, or any experience that you have that you think is really brand new, there is nothing new under the sun. Somebody's had it before. Somebody's thought it before. You're nothing special. Another theme of Ecclesiastes. From dust we have come, and to dust we shall return. Well, there's a happy thought. Another one. It will do you no good to try to imitate somebody else or envy someone else. Another one. We spend our lives accumulating, 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 but when we do that, we simply do not enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Another thought of Ecclesiastes. We try and try to be good, but we try and we try to be good, but on this earth, no one is so righteous as to never sin. The thought being, so don't try so hard. Another thing, it is pointless to dwell on the good old days. Take that, all us old people. It is pointless to dwell on the good old days. We toil and we toil to make our mouths happy, and yet our appetites are never satisfied. Words, words, words. What's the point? It's exactly what you're thinking about my sermon right now. Another thought from Ecclesiastes, the opposite of so much else that we think when we think about religion. The writer of Ecclesiastes says, you know what? No one's ever been able to figure out what God is up to on this earth. Another thought from Ecclesiastes, in a world where dogs were utterly despised, sorry dog lovers, but there were cultures and there were times when dogs were like the worst. But the writer of Ecclesiastes says a living dog is more powerful than a dead lion. Don't get so worked up about everything. In fact, don't get worked up at all, period. Don't pay attention to things, everything that people say to you, or else you'll hear people who are useless cursing you. The harder we apply ourselves to honest work, the better we'll sleep at night. Something else, again, seems like the total opposite of other passages of the Bible. Do not be too righteous or too wise, or you will destroy yourself. And here's something that's a total opposite of what we want our kids to learn. The race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to the skillful. But chance happens to all, and mortals get snared in calamity regardless. Wow, there's a real pleasant thought. Or this one. In the making of many books, there is no end, and study is wearisome for the flesh. I'm pretty sure that there's not a religious school in the country that asks its students to memorize that verse. So here I am, and I'm holding this old quarter in my hand, and I'm looking at this photo of Mindy and Allison that's on the wall, And I can't remember where that photo was taken. I can't remember what month we took it. I can't remember what day. I'm trying to remember, and I can't remember. I can't remember what I had to eat that day. I can't remember what else I had to do that day. I can't remember what was worrying me back then. I know something was worrying me. I can't remember a day of my life when I didn't have something I wasn't worried or concerned or trying to handle. But I can't remember a thing about that day 3 decades ago. The only thing I knew as I stood there in the bedroom looking at that photo of my daughters from 3 decades ago, the only thing that I knew for absolutely for sure is that 3 decades ago, I was not worrying about losing the sight of my right eye because of a retina problem. I know I wasn't worried about that back then. I know, absolutely I know, that I was not worried about a stroke that my dad just had and that he's dying, and even though he has his good days and his bad days and makes a little progress, that he's near the end. I know I wasn't worried about that on the day that photo was taken. On the day that that photo was taken, I know that I was not worried that the United States government is holding children in cages. I was not worried about that on that day. I know that on that day, I was not worried about a Chinese wife going to her first church in Seidel and wondering what was going to happen in terms of the people there receiving a Chinese person as their pastor. On Tuesday morning, which was Jay's first day on the job, she had gotten a bulletin that said there's going to be a council meeting next week. She didn't know there was going to be a council meeting. We're in the car. We're driving along. I said, call the chair. Look in your chart. Call the woman who's the chair of the council. Find out what it's about. And so she looked up the name and she dialed the phone. It's coming over the car phone. And so I was able to listen in on it. And Jay said, hi, my name is Jay Wu and I'm your new pastor. And the woman said, I don't want anything to do with you, and slammed down the phone. Because when this woman found out she has a Chinese pastor, she quit the church. I know that 30 years ago, on the day my children are smiling in that photo, I know I wasn't worried about that. I know that I wasn't worried about the challenges that my now 3 adult daughters face, that adult daughters face all the time. I wasn't worried about that back then. When that photo was taken, I could not imagine the things that my daughters would have to deal with. I had no worry of that back then. I know for a fact I was worried and troubled about some things. And I know for a fact that the things that bothered me on the day that photo was taken were just as hard on me then as the things are today. I don't have more worries or more problems or more burdens. I had just as many back then. But I can't remember what they were back then. I look at the photo and I can see that my daughters were happy. And I can't remember what I was happy about that day. I know I was happy because I've lived my life that way. I've lived my life with a determination that every single day I'm going to find something to be happy about. And I got that way when I was in high school because the English teacher had us read Thornton Wilder's play, Our Town. And in that play, one of the key characters is Emily. And Emily dies in childbirth. And she goes to the cemetery, and it's a play, so people in the cemetery talk to each other. And here's Emily having died in childbirth. She's talking to other people in the cemetery, and she finds this occurs near the end, almost at the very end of the play. And she learns that you can go back and relive one day of your life. And so she decides she's going to go back and relive her 10th birthday. She's so excited. But when she goes back and she relives that day, she is tortured. Because it seems as though everybody in her life doesn't seem to see all the blessings and all the good things. They're so worried. They're so anxious. Things are mattering to them that pretty soon, I mean, Emily can see from the other side, it didn't really matter, and yet you got so worked up about all that stuff. I read that when I was in high school. And so I determined at that point, it was one of the most influential things in my life. There have been several. But I determined at that point that I was not ever going to, I was going to try to see things that ordinary people maybe don't see, gifts and pleasures and blessings every day. And I have lived my life, so I know on the day that photo was taken, I know that I had experienced numerous joys and numerous happy things myself. I can't remember what any of them were, other than I know there were some. The only days I've not ever felt some blessing or some happiness are days when I've had the stomach flu. Okay, give me a pass on those. So, but the writer of Ecclesiastes encourages us to experience joy and happiness in our lives. And this is where, okay, distract your teenagers. Ecclesiastes says, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. That's Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes says, there's nothing better for mortals to do than eat and drink and find enjoyment in their work. Don't work for some payoff tomorrow. Work for the pleasure of the work today. Another saying from Ecclesiastes, if you do not enjoy life and all of its good things, it would have been better for you if you were stillborn. Another, I commend enjoyment. There's nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and enjoy yourself. That's in the Bible. Well, my daughters look like they were following it, at least in the photo there. Go, eat your bread with enjoyment. Drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has long ago approved of what you do. Boy, we don't tell teenagers that one. Let your garments be sparkling. Oil yourself up. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love. As though somehow, like you choose between her and the one you don't. I don't know how that, I'm not sure what they're talking about there. And whatever your hand finds to do, do it with might. And this one, rejoice while you are young. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Follow the inclination of your hearts and the desires of your eyes. There will be judgment from God. But banish anxiety from your mind, for youth and the dawn of life are fleeting. In other words, better to be judged for something you grabbed a hold of than to be judged because God gave you life and you chickened out. So many things. Boy, we don't talk about Ecclesiastes much, do we, in the church? Why not? Maybe our kids will misbehave if they get word of this too often. The book of Ecclesiastes, in fact, ridicules the book of Proverbs. Isn't that amazing? To me, it's one of the most fascinating things about the Bible. Here we have the book of Proverbs, and the very next book ridicules the one we just read. What do you make of that? The book of Proverbs, the writer of Proverbs, is so sure of everything. The writer of Proverbs tells us, if you just follow this plan, if you just obey these rules, if you just keep your mouth shut, if you just be kind and patient with others, if you just do this, if you just share with others, if you just do the right thing, then your life will be blessed. That's the message of the writer of Proverbs. The writer of Proverbs assures us that the cosmos is tit for tat. You do good by God, and God will make sure that good comes to you. So says the writer of Proverbs. And then we finish Proverbs 31 and we turn the page to Ecclesiastes 1, and the writer of Ecclesiastes says, well, no, that's not true. That's not how life works. That's not how God works. God is not a vending machine where you kick in your good behavior and God will reward you for it. You kick in your prayers and God will give you what you want. the writer of Ecclesiastes says, everything you read in Proverbs, that's not how it works. It's not how life is. Get real. And for myself, the older I get, the more I can see that the book of Proverbs does have truth in it. The book of Proverbs has a lot of truth in it. But sometimes I read Ecclesiastes and I think, Proverbs may have truth, but Ecclesiastes nails it. For the most part. The major theme of Ecclesiastes is this. Your life is not going to work out like you planned. That's why I had you work on that question ahead of time here. Your life is not going to work out like you planned. You don't control things. And the people you love, you cannot make life work out for them. No matter how much I love those girls in that photo on the wall, I could not save them from the disappointment, the hatred, the tragedy, the betrayals, the things that they were going to have to face in life. That's not how life works. That if you're just wise enough, if you're just rich enough, if you're just educated enough, if you're just strong enough, it's not how life works. The writer of Ecclesiastes is absolutely right. It's not how it works. But the thing here about Ecclesiastes is this. You know, once we find out life isn't going to work out like we want, that it's not going to work out like we've planned, once we discover that, most of the time, I don't know about you, but most of the time I begin to get cynical or sarcastic or bitter or depressed. That's generally how I respond. It's really hard when things don't turn out like you want them to. But the writer of Ecclesiastes, he muddles right into the middle of this. Unlike any other writer of any other book of the Bible, I mean, he just smacks us with reality. And yet, he's never cynical. He's never sarcastic. He's never bitter. He's never depressed. He delivers the truth, but he does it in a way that's honest and hopeful and affirming and encouraging to find joy in however life does turn out. It's amazing to me. Just about everybody I know, when life throws them something bad. I mean, we like to say, well, yeah, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. But, you know, boy, if you're in the middle of getting a lemon thrown at you, lemonade doesn't sound all that good. But the writer of Ecclesiastes delivers the truth, but he does it in a way that's surprisingly hopeful. So, the scripture I read you to begin the sermon. There's a time for war, a time for peace, a time for... That's the message of Ecclesiastes. All of these things are going to happen to us. It's all going to happen. We can't keep that list of things. We can't keep a single one of them from happening in our lives. It's all going to happen. A time to plant, a time to sow, a time to tear, a time to gather stones. It's all going to happen. A time to be born, a time to die, it's going to happen. But the writer of Ecclesiastes helps us live through what is inevitable with grace and hope and newfound strength. So with each of these books, I'm going to wrap this up real quickly here. With each of these books, we ask ourselves, what's the good news? What's the bad news? What's the practical application of it? The good news... The bad news of Ecclesiastes is that all that stuff's going to happen. Everything I read in chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes, yeah. The reason we say, sometimes we read that in weddings, and the reason, but also remember what we say in weddings, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. We say all those things because it's all going to happen. So that's the bad news. It's all going to happen. But the good news found in Ecclesiastes is that there's something wonderful also happening every day. There's always a gift from God. There's always something that maybe we overlooked because we were too busy pouting. There's always, God never leaves us bereft. There's always some beauty, some grace, some kindness. It may not come from the person we want it to come from, but it's there nonetheless. The practical applications of Ecclesiastes. Be sure that we always enjoy something every single day. One of the things that's often a joy for me is to read Mindy's Facebook page. I mean, still looking for work and stuff, but always she's got something on her Facebook of something she's enjoying. And every time I see something she posts, I go, phew. Always find something every single day. Some blessing, something where we can give thanks. A second practical application of Ecclesiastes. And I haven't mentioned this yet. No matter what happens, whether it's a time for this or a time for that, every day, remember this, this is practical. Reach out and connect with someone. Don't ever do it alone. Here's what it says from the fourth chapter of Ecclesiastes. Two are better than one. They have a good reward for their toil. If they fall, one can lift the other. But woe to the one who's alone and falls and does not have another to help. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though one might prevail against another, two will withstand one. A threefold cord is not easily broken. Ecclesiastes 4, beginning with verse 9. When my daughters got ready to leave home, I basically only had one word of advice. Mindy will probably tell you I had like hundreds of words of advice, but the main thing I really wanted them to know is wherever you go, find a friend. Find your friends. Make friends, keep them, because two are better than one. That night after I heard what that woman said to Jay, I saw some people in the Seidel church. And I pulled a few of them aside and I told them what happened. So I'm not worried about Jay. And I'm not worried about the Seidel church, because once they heard what was said to her, they're going to take care of it. Find your friends. Don't ever go into a situation alone. It may not be the friend that you would have tailor-made or designed for yourself, but always God's going to put somebody there for you in every situation. You may have to kind of roll with somebody you hadn't custom ordered. And then thirdly, don't take yourself and your efforts or your troubles so seriously. It'll only make you part of the problem. Troubles are real. The writer of Ecclesiastes is not trying to say that. But it's important that we be able to say, I'm not going to let this become too much to me. Practical advice. Now I want to end this sermon on Ecclesiastes like I ended the sermon on Job, because the two books are very similar to each other in their outlook and in their understanding of how difficult life can be. It's from the old Shaker hymn. After we've made all of our efforts to try to be the best, to have the most, and so forth, along comes the old Shaker hymn, and it says, 'Tis a gift to be simple. 'Tis a gift to be free. 'Tis a gift to come down where you ought to be. And when you find your place in the light just right, you will dwell in the valley of love and delight.'" About the time Mindy was 6 and Allison was 4, I do know that I had taught them that song by that time. And every day I enjoy seeing the smiles, because those have continued. The book of Ecclesiastes.